the Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Taking Stock. It is Monday. It's a brand new week, the 7th of the August 2023. Have a nice weekend, John.
Yeah, it was right. So busy. Busy. Yeah, okay. Tidy. Well, it was raining, so I was just sort of took the opportunity to do all the bits, the household chores that I hadn't got around to doing previously.
Yeah, what happened to the weather on the weekend?
No.
Is this a sign? In fact, this is quite ties in with our subject of the day. By the way, subscribe, like if you could, and share if you like this, because we want to build a sort of community chatting about small caps, nano caps, micro caps, all that area, and a passion, people with a passion about investing. You should hit that subscribe button. Okay, so there was a, you know, Society Motor Manufacturers and Traders came up with some figures, I think Friday, actually. And I was surprised by this. They're saying that it was 16% market share was EVs. And they're saying it will take up 23% of the market share by the year end.
60% of new sales.
Registrations, yes.
Yeah.
In July. And they're saying by the end of the year. And I was surprised how big a market share already that is. Now, I'm not quite sure that's hybrids. No, hybrids as well, 35% actually. So it's a lot of people are getting into EVs, aren't they? And I'm just wondering. So, put a survey out there. Have you thought about, you know, do you own an EV? You know, have you thought about getting one, or is there no chance whatsoever you will entertain the fact that you're going to get an EV? Because I know that some people feel very strongly about it. You know, I just think, is how does it work logistically? If you buy the last, say, available, you know, sort of petrol, diesel car, how long can you run that for before they stop selling petrol and diesel? I know the engines stop selling at 2030. Or can you still buy hybrids then, I think, can you?
I must admit, I haven't really paid that much attention to that sort of deadline. There's a lot of talk at the moment, you know, it's all going to get shifted anyway. That it's a completely unrealistic deadline. I saw the survey results. I voted myself.
What's it looking at the moment?
It seems like there's an amazing amount of appetite for electric vehicles among our audience.
Let's have a look. Yeah, so far we're looking at I own one is 12.4%. It'll be my next car, 18%. And pretty much 70% said no chance. It's quite a strong feeling there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny one. You know, I would own an electric car, but I want to see the infrastructure massively improved. You know, I want fast chargers all around the country. And, you know, they don't really, the fast charging network is very, very small. I mean, despite, you know, what you would see claimed by the likes of BP and Shell, which operate, you know, huge number of the UK's garages, they don't have a lot of infrastructure in them.
Well, do you know what? I was listening to BBC Radio 5 Live, Wake Up to Money in the morning, you know, and there's a guy on that, there's a CEO of Moto, which is the service stations. And he was saying the government has told them they have to have at least 6 fast charging chargers in their things now. And he said, we've got that already, but we can't get the power to them. We haven't got enough power. And he thinks we're at a critical juncture here where we won't even be able to support the rollout of EV vehicles. And so you have to know, it's okay saying, you know, the service station has 10 chargers or whatever, but how many of those are connected, actually, you know, serving? And he said, at the moment, we can't. We can't get power to our chargers.
That's really quite interesting. I mean, it sort of it echoes what I've been hearing about a lot of sort of renewable generation stuff as well. That actually one of the big problems, and this then feeds through into things like housing construction, you know, that the grid can't support new connections, that actually there are huge delays on new connections. You know, so it's a story that I've heard bandied about, and I would need to check this out further, is that, you know, building housing estates in West London at the moment is impossible because you can't hook them up to the grid.
Grid
infrastructure is a big problem.
All these promises from the government saying we're going to do this and going to do that, and then you can't actually do it. And in fact, when you think about it, you know, Rishi Sunak's are rolling back on that pledge about new oil and gas licenses. Maybe that's part of the play. Maybe he realizes they are behind time. They're not going to meet electrification anyway, or the, you know, net zero goals, and so they have to roll it back and start saying, okay, let's. And you probably see an extra 5 years added to that petrol diesel engine sale. 2030 is the deadline.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I answered no chance. And I think no chance. I mean, it was a bit of a sort of cheeky, loaded answer that in our poll. Because I would own an electric car, but the thing is, I don't want to buy an electric car until the one I've got has been driven into the ground. You know, I've got a 2018 petrol car. I've had it for 3 years, bought it secondhand. I will drive that car until it literally falls to bits.
I've been looking because I got to renew the car because we got a sort of lease car, but I have been looking around for EVs and. But again, I don't care about getting a new car. I like to drive a car. It's fine. The car we got is fine. Yeah. You know,
so the car you've got. Go on. You say. No,
Chris on Vox was saying the most environmentally friendly option is to keep your car, isn't it? Changing cars all the time is not environmentally friendly. You know, every
there
2 years.
There is a massive amount of embedded carbon in a car. You know, forget the fuel, but actually to make a car. Has a large carbon footprint. So what Chris says is true, and that's my philosophy on this as well.
Yeah, let's look at the markets here. Let's share the screen here. Let's look at a quick look at the markets here. It's not a good day. FTSE down 0.71%. FTSE 250 less than that, 0.45. In fact, fearing the best, again, is the AIM All share. Now look at Rolls-Royce. Rolls-Royce is one of the risers again. It's doing very well. Momentum behind that's going well. What's the faller today then? Unite, Glencore, a lot of the miners there. Ashtead is a star there. Anglo-American, a lot of the miners. Whitbread's rising, but let's have a look on a mall share there. Rises, fallers, Celsius Resources. Okay, so it's not a good looking market today at the moment. All down a bit. Comments wise, this is a good one from Investomatic, and quite ironic, I think, considering his name is Investomatic. He's saying, random question, it's not random because it's about investing. Any questions are welcome. How often do you reassess your portfolio in terms of keeping it balanced to the levels you want? I'm trying to do it on a monthly basis, but failing as I cannot resist tinkering all the time. I know, tinkering is a thing. It's very hard to resist that. But I find it ironic, it's called Investomatic, like it's done automatically, but manually is tinkering around. Maybe that's it, maybe you should, you know, align with your name a bit more and just, what is it, so John, as far as exposure-wise is concerned, do you ever have, you know, in your head levels that you're happy with or won't go above?
In what sense? In terms of one company?
One company, so total exposure, it's a total value of your portfolio. How much of that sort of, you know, portfolio value are you happy to go up to in a single company, single investment?
I mean, I wouldn't want to put too much, you know, in any one company. I mean, because the concentration risk would be absolutely enormous. If you had, you know, if you had 100 grand, put 100 grand in a name, you know, Tinto, and I hope they went up and it went down. You've lost a lot. So, you know, that would be insanity to me. I mean, we talked about this the other day. I think a sort of diversified portfolio of sort of 15 stocks, you know, equally weighted is pretty reasonable. I mean, I don't tend to worry about, you know, the stuff I've got in my SIP and the allocations there, because as I've said, the bulk of my pension saving is in collective vehicles anyway. And they're sort of naturally balanced. You buy, you know, you allocate or you buy the product or you select the product rather, you know, according to your life stage and the kind of degree of risk you're willing to take on.
Yeah.
But you know, the old rule is that, you know, 60-40 equities bonds was where you should be, but that hasn't really worked for a while. And it has sort of started to come back as rates have normalized. But yeah, I mean, I just sort of, you know, I let the collective do the hard work and worry about that. And as I say, this bit, it's fun, really.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I look, you know, depends what it is, but generally I try not to go over 10% too much. I have gone way over that, but I looked about that as a start. When I started investing in a company, I looked to put no more than 3% in, just in case I get it wrong and goes the wrong way. And if it goes the wrong way, then it's not going to hit you so much. Now, if you go in, say, straight away with like 20% of your portfolio in one stock and it goes the wrong way, you'll feel painful. So I start then, you know, averaging up if it starts going the right way, and then 10% pretty much. But in this market, during the bull market, I would sort of, you know, average down sometimes and dips. But in a bear market, I don't see those dips. It's a downtrend and it can be painful for a long time. And you got to be careful. It's a newish company. It could go through. So, but yeah, I start off on sort of 3% total portfolio value. And then I'll get 10, But
I'm sorry,
I don't mind if it goes in the right direction and I become more exposed to it because the momentum's with the stock. But averaging down and increasing your exposure can be very dangerous because it means the share price is going in the wrong direction, you know, initially, and you are putting more money into it. So be careful of that.
Just going back to the original question. I mean, it depends what sort of balancing you're doing and what you're trying to achieve in that balancing. Yeah. You know, and if you've, you know, if you're, I mean, a month seems like quite frequent. That seems like almost tinkering anyway, at that frequency and sort of somewhat arbitrary. I mean, I think you should keep an eye on a portfolio. And if you've had a really, you know, strong winner that suddenly comes to dominate your portfolio, then you should perhaps have a think about how you rebalance it for risk management purposes. Equally, you know, if you've got something that's just gone wrong, then just cut it. Don't worry about the balancing. So I'm not entirely clear what you're balancing, what one would be balancing towards, because you can never keep everything in perfect equilibrium. Markets don't work like that.
It's true. Yeah, I mean, I look in I look at percentage figures. In general terms, I don't think it every day, making sure it's 10% or 3%. Initially, but it is a cracking Alan here. Has made a profit from trading an EV vehicle. He said, I sold my EV a year at a good profit at the peak of EV market because of poor journey range, especially in the winter. If that improves significantly together with more reliable charging points, I will buy back in. So he sold at the top and he's going to buy some more. I like that. I didn't realize that. In the winter, the range changes. That's amazing.
These batteries, this is the thing that bothers me, and I think we've spoken about this before. I mean, I think there has to be some serious development on the battery front for these to really sort of, you know, exist on a like-for-like basis with internal combustion engines. This is why, again, I keep my eye on Ilika and what they're doing with those Goliath batteries. I think they're potentially very interesting. If all you were ever doing was driving around town, you know, and not going very far, EV's probably, you know, wonderful.
That's the thing. Yeah, that's the thing.
But if you are traveling across the country, then that's where I think it becomes very difficult. My parents have got a hybrid. I think the hybrid's great. Really great.
Michael says, I have an i3 fully electric, great for local journey. Charge it off solar panels. That's the way forward. That's what I wouldn't mind getting, actually. Solar panels, heat pump, charges car. So you're cutting down on electricity usage anyway. And in fact, some very good stats from, I don't know if good energies there, 3.4 times the power output compared to power input for heat pumps, whereas gas boilers run at 80 to 90%. So you're again, 304% out. Anyway, Journey to work, he used a diesel Range Rover and will run that up to 200,000 miles, only on 65,000 now. Yeah, keep cars for longer. By the way, let's look at SED. Someone did say other things. Don't worry about talking about your own stocks, Justin. You know, it's like any other investment idea. They're all good ideas. I agree. By the way, accidentally, that's Destiny Farm.
We're not talking about Destiny Farm.
Someone said, have you looked at Sieta? I'm not back in Sieta. I do like this chart, though. As you can see, that's pretty much a gap there, and it came down and broke that level there. Now it's trying to get back into that range. Now, if you get above that, we're back in uptrend, maybe. And I did like the update. It's worth looking at the interview Paul Hill did on Fox with Tony Gott. And, of course, that restructuring of that American deal not only saves them money, but they're paid, I was 3.3 or 3.6 million euros, I think it was. And they had cash beforehand for 12 months anyway.
Potentially a bit of upside there from licensing as well, because of royalties along the line. Yeah. So, it's sensible. Very sensible.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, enjoying stock. Yeah, so thank you very much, Free Capitalists. Really enjoying taking stock, not being able to catch it live yet. Please don't hear you ask for support for the channel. Oh, just so a quality double act, you're saying, John, you and I. There we are. Double act there.
Saint and Greaves here, I think. Paul Hill
Mike says, loving the reaction to Jeremy Hunt's plan. I refer you to Mike Tyson's quote, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Right.
True. Let's look at the content on Vox at the moment. What's on there this morning? Let's just get this here. We've got a draft there. Why is that in draft?
Because it hasn't been published properly, which will be very shortly.
Rockfort. I'm aware of that from social media because I know some of the guys on social media have been talking about that. But it's been a hard journey. it's going to happen kind of in small caps or micro caps. You can be scrolling that from September 2021. It's gone from, 10 pence down to five and a half pence in a dollar. But now, within a couple of trading sessions, you're almost back to that high. That's what you can do that with micro caps, you know? People worry about, 5% drops here and there and the grind down. But all of a sudden, you can literally rally like crazy back to normal. But there's a bit of content there on Rockfort from Lauren. Check
out. Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's early stage still.
Yeah.
But a very important area, and they've made some real progress. But, early stage, but definitely worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, and what's this rent guarantor stuff that you're looking at?
It's quite interesting. Well, somebody asked us to look at it. I've got a message on Twitter. So rent guarantor, it's quite a big company, actually. It's like 30 million market cap on Aquis. And it moves up to the apex segment of Aquis earlier this year. And basically what it does, a lot of tenants or prospective tenants need a guarantee for their rent when they're trying to secure a property.
Yeah.
So you think people like students or retirees or universal credit claimants who don't necessarily have a steady income and a job, as it were, where they can get that sort of rent guarantee from their employer. And there's they've signed this partnership anyway with a company called The Lettings Hub. Does 180,000 references a year for tenancies, and 12% of those need a guarantor. And research that Rent Guarantor have conducted suggests that around two-fifths of that segment of the market would rather pay someone like Rent Guarantor to do this commercially than ask their family for their guarantee. It's really quite interesting. There's huge pressure in the rental market, not just on sort of what you might call distressed tenants, but everybody. I saw a headline this week that London rents are going to hit, an average of $2,700 a month next year. So getting a guarantee to secure a property is becoming increasingly important. And obviously landlords, they need that guarantee because, as interest rate rise and their costs, their borrowing costs and their, management costs, the regulation is increasing all the time for them, which is expensive. Then they need to make sure that they're going to get their rent. Yeah. And rent guarantors, call it a little bit of fintech, maybe prop tech even, that sits in the middle and does this. Interesting.
Okay, and we got GTEC there. Did they rise there? That we got two bits of news: GTEC and prospects. But GTEC are going into the hydrogen market, sort of. So they're helping locate sort of hydrogen, potential hydrogen assets. Really, there.
Yeah, share price isn't
reacting to that. That's a. I did own GTEC for a while, but I got out. I couldn't take the pain any longer. It was going down and down and down, and then I just cut my loss. And went, but I did like what they're doing. Software as a service, then exposure to green hydrogen assets. But they realise now that's going to take a lot longer to realise any value from that than previously thought. So
they basically they help oil and gas companies, don't they? Find oil. Manage the sort of the data on surveying those prospects, and they're tracing these. This is a reflection of the transition, and I think they said that something like 90% of their revenue used to be oil and gas related, hydrocarbons related, and they're shifting the business towards sort of renewable sources, mining, strategic sources of critical minerals for the energy transition, hydrogen. It's interesting. I mean, they haven't made.
They look that. They just need to suggest there are vast resources of clean geological hydrogen beneath the Earth's surface that can accelerate the energy transition.
So I must admit, this is the first time I've heard anyone talk about this. And most of this talk of hydrogen I've heard is essentially man-made hydrogen, whether that's
electrolyzer, separated water, all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So whether it's purely green hydrogen that's made from renewable energy, passing water through electrolyzers, or derived from hydrocarbons, whether it's sort of grey hydrogen or blue hydrogen. It's the first time I've heard about sort of naturally extracted hydrogen. So this is quite intriguing. I mean, I'm just looking at GTEC's numbers there, and the problem I really have with this business is where's the profit? The profit? And it's been going a long time.
Even a guidance forecast, there's no forecast profit there.
I do have a forecast. Looking at SharePad, and it's for this year. But again, it's another pre-tax loss, 3.2 million. And it's just where they've got to start making money, if they to be taken seriously by potential investors.
Yeah. Italy's is Prospect Energy, sell the field development, successful ramp up and commissioning of Padirmer, I don't know how to say that one, gas facility in Po Valley. Po Valley.
Po Valley, that's easy enough to say. But this
is,
I mean,
Teletubbies Po, isn't it? Is that where he lives?
It's a really nice company, this. Really nice company.
Yeah, they've gone into production. It's taken years and years to get into production. The big ramp up, almost the anticipation of it happening, it happened, and the gas price has fallen off. So it's come back down a little bit. It's obviously exposed the gas price. But the gas price is going to rise again. Like we are, if we go to the, you know, commodities, the gas price. I mean, look at it. It is, you know, pretty much 12-month lows. It's going to rally. And once that rallies, like with gold and gold miners, they're more leveraged to it. So if that starts to rally, then prospects of energy will start to rally as well.
You know? Yeah, I mean, am I looking at my company? Because that share price does not reflect, you know, what I'm looking at, which is a company that I'm looking at the wrong share price. That's why.
Yeah, that'll explain. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're soon to go into production, so.
Yeah. I got to big up my bit of content this morning. I chatted to Richard, CEO. I do hold shares in this. I've owned for since 2020, and I did suggest to him. Right, I said, listen, you get sectors and sentiment, and negative and positive sentiment towards sectors. Certain companies can rally just on sentiment, whether they're a good business or not. And I said, you are being tainted with the leisure sentiment stick, when many companies in that sector are not growing at all. Your like for likes, 19-20% in Escape Hunt, Boom Battle Bar, you are literally growing very quickly in a very exciting new area of leisure, but you are being tainted and valued like an old legacy leisure company, which is slightly frustrating because they're doing everything they said they would do. They've ticked all the boxes. They've expanded massively. They're hitting profits, and just the share price literally it came out with an amazing trading update last week, and then all of a sudden it rallied and people took some profit. And it's
I think there's a bit of wait and see going on here.
Because
I think you're right. We spoke about it the other day. Huge sort of operational progress in terms of the rollout. Some really nice numbers coming through. But the company is on the cusp of profitability.
They've opened 27 Boom Battle Bars in a year, right? And now all that sunk cost is in. Now literally it's in cash to the bottom line pretty much. And he said, we've done three very positive updates now, from interims to finals to interims for that. And yet the share price goes up. But that's a range. When you have a rise at that, and you come off, there is a lot of churn in the stock. There's a lot of churn, people taking profit. There's people buying, people selling. And it does need to find that level where sellers sort of dry up and all you get is net buying, and it will go up. Either it doesn't go up or it gets bought out by a leisure company that hasn't got growth and is going to buy growth.
Can this possibly be right? I mean, I assume you've looked at the forecast, Justin. I assume I'm looking at the same company. I am. A pre-tax profit forecast for 24 of like 15 million.
Listen, based on this year's figures, the broker has a 32 pence target. But the top line is about 50 odd million top line. It's they're going to keep growing. And I think they just opened one in Dubai and it's going very well. And I think America's a very good market for their broker bars.
But you start to look at those, should that momentum continue? And as you say, translate into really strong cash flow and really the profits sort of hockey stick up from 2024. Then the rating just becomes
exactly. After a while, you can't ignore it, and it's almost like, and what's really compelling. You're talking about the original escape rooms, the first seven they opened. So they haven't changed any games from those, and they're still growing at 14%, like for like. He said, so you mentioned that the costs were sunk into those, pretty much the capital costs, the capex for those, like 7 years ago, or 2017.
I suspect there's a lot of people that have never, ever done an escape room, and I would say that I'm one of them.
Yeah.
The only time I tried to book anything similar was somebody had a very good idea of opening a Crystal Maze thing in London that you could do as a corporate team. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of looking at this, and then COVID hit. But I get it. I totally get the concept.
Well, you get two lots. Me, I'm not a huge fan of escape rooms. I like Boom Battle Bar. I've been there twice now. I really enjoy it.
And, is that throwing axes, is it?
Yeah, so one of the shuffleboard is the best. It's so addictive.
It's so addictive.
Yeah, it really is. You play against each other, but it's excellent. But there's lots of games. There's darts and then virtual reality darts, all that kind of stuff. So there's a pool. So all the traditional stuff, but there's a twist on it as well. So there's a lot more choice than you would in a normal bar. Mm. But anyway, Paul Hill's got a bit of an Abing Trans there.
Yeah.
And
nice acquisition.
Yeah, so look at most followed today. Unusual, you get to it's from mid cap, small cap, or larger. Hey, man, what is the size of my card factory now?
350 million.
Yeah, well, there we are. What are they called? Small cap, mid cap, maybe.
I'm going to have to. John Rosier is going to hate me for this. So every month I speak to John Rosier, as you know, John Rosier is, he runs, he's a private investor who used to work in the city, but he runs this fantastic blog where he basically updates. Everybody on what he's doing with his portfolio. And one of the most transparent things I've ever seen, we speak to him once a month on Vox. And a couple of months ago, I asked him what was on his watch list, and he said Card Factory. Because, he was looking at the earnings upgrade cycle. He was looking at the sort of cash flow growth that this company was generating. And that sort of change in the dynamic behind the business. And he said, yeah, someone watched this. Not sure I'm going to buy it yet. And I don't think he did.
No. Well, do you know what? I saw this opportunity here. The fact there's risen gap down, hasn't come above this. It's almost a head and shoulders. This could come gap back. This could come back down. I mean, it's good. I mean, it's amazing that Card Factory is one of these companies where, unless you did some research, you think, oh, that's a dying business, that kind of business. But you realise they had a bit of a turnaround, didn't they? And it restructured everything. And look at the rise of that. When you get these unloved companies but become good businesses, it's a very good area to fish in, because look at that, it went from like 45 pence up to £1.5. And it was unloved for a long time.
Yeah. Do you know what? I don't pay a lot of attention to the news at the weekend because I was too busy doing other stuff. But there was some news this weekend from the sector. Clinton's. Which is another big kind of used to be listed, been through all sorts of ups and downs, but it's closing a fifth of its shops, it said at the weekend. That can only be good news for Card Factory.
Yeah. And they say, by the way, the reason why they're up today is that they said a current outlook for the second half, the board now expects a full year outturn to be materially ahead
massive.
If you were holding a stock and they come out with that, you love that. When you say ahead of expectations, but when you say materially ahead or significantly ahead, that's ideal. But what's the gap here is a little bit worrying on a head and shoulders pattern. It may go sideways for a while,
I'm looking at the forecast of this business. And you've got a forecast PE of 7.8 for 2024, 7.1 for 25. You've got EBITDA margin over 20%. There's a lot to like about this business. I agree. You walk past it in the street and think nothing of it in the local shopping centre, but they're doing something right.
Yeah. Most read today is about Vast basically extending their debt deadline. But can I say to Vast, I've actually spoken to Andrew Prayer about this. Put the name on your RNS.
Yeah, that would really help.
Company, I don't know why that is. You're the only company that hasn't got it. I don't know why. And he thought, no, it's nothing to do with us. And he didn't seem to accept it. But as far as Rise is concerned, Trinity, there's news on that. They've got an oil discovery confirmed there. Virgin Oil found in a super mature basin. Material impact on Palo Seco acreage in the Buenos Aires block. So they're looking, testing that now. Any oil brought out of that will be sold straight away, they say there. As far as fall is concerned, what was it? Christie's Group, yeah. I don't know. I thought it was the old auctioneer house or something, but it's not. Is anything to do with that or not?
No. It's a funny business. It's a funny business. That's all sorts of things. It's basically bit support services. Across a range of sectors, does all sorts of things. So I actually looked at it a while back. They had a trading update. Have you got the chart? Put the chart up, Justin, because they put out a trading update. So we've got a trading update today, which wasn't so great. But they put a trading update earlier in the year, which was really quite positive.
So this is where it rose up here, maybe.
Yeah.
And then it's come back down, up, and then gap right down now. So what has changed from, earlier on in the year till now?
Yeah, so basically, so what they do is they've got different things. They've got professional services, and this is basically helping businesses buy and sell themselves. You know, it's basically transaction advisory for small businesses in certain sectors. They've got another division which supports, it's very strange, stock management, particularly in the hospitality industry. So as you can imagine, they had an absolutely horrendous time during the pandemic. And, you know, a few months ago, this stock management business was starting to show some really, really nice signs of recovery. And they've also got a ticketing business as well. The problem here seems to have been that the transaction business, the transaction advisory business has gone very, very, very quiet.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is say, again, you know, it's hospitality, retail, things like that, care homes. So yeah, you know, and you can understand why it's gone quiet, because this interest rate environment is proving tough for everybody. And, you know, buying and selling properties is tough.
Yeah, it's from 2015. And basically, you could trade this in a range. So basically, you know, 2015, it hit a high of 160, came back down 2017 to 70 pence, back up to 160, back down again. So wait until it gets back to the 70 pence, put an alert on it, then, you know, wait for an upgrade in their earnings and stuff, and it'll rally back to the high. But literally, if it's not breaking out of that, all the time it's going up and down.
I think it's quite a nice company, but it's, you know, it's at the mercy of the economic backdrop at the moment. There was another company that has some news out today.
Yeah.
Sort of echoes or relates to what we've been talking about in terms of the property market recently. LSL Property Services, they're down heavily today as well. So if you remember, we spoke about Belvoir, which had been insulated from a lot of the problems in the market because of its exposure to rental. LSL, you know, far less of that. This is pretty much a straight estate agency, it's a bank group.
Yeah.
And so they're seeing much lower mortgage volumes, much lower surveying volumes. And the result is that, you know, this trading update was a bit lackluster, and the shares are down about 12%. So, you know, there you go.
Do you know what's interesting? I do say this good news, bad news thing is, you know, what's good for sort of, well, bad for the economy is good for the markets, because if we see further weakness, and in fact, if you look at the day, we've got UK hiring falls at its fastest pace in over 3 years as wage growth slows. And that's what the Bank of England are particularly looking at. The only thing they're sticking is wage growth. And they're trying to say, you kept saying this, Andrew, but I know what you're trying to say. Don't give pay rises to people, or try not to go for pay rises. It's easy for you to say, like I said, if you're on 500 grand a year. But
that wasn't well received when he made that.
Exactly. But you understand what he's saying, because that's the sticky environment. But that seems now, because hiring has fallen, then, you know, people are not taking people on. There won't be demand for, you know, higher wages. So that's going to help. By the way, this is quite scary. The rate of pub closures reaches decade high as rate hikes and inflation bites. So some 223 pub businesses entered insolvency in the second quarter of this year, up from 200 in the first quarter. So a total of 729 pubs went bust over the last 12 months.
I'm not surprised.
80% increase,
I'm really not surprised.
Well, that's it. About XP Factory, they're tarred in with this kind of leisure sort of hospitality, and they're growing very quickly. And you've got the other opposite end, you know, pubs are shutting their doors because it's so expensive.
But this trend, I mean, of course, it's been, you know, exacerbated by the cost of living crisis and COVID. But this trend has been going on for years, you know. The number of pubs has been falling steadily for years and years and years. You know, I live in a village. It used to be three pubs. Now there's one. You know, this is the you don't need that. It's changing lifestyles, changing habits.
Yeah.
You know, changing opportunities for people and to spend their social time in different ways. As you said, and, you know, I think that plays to XP Factory.
Yeah, well, it's more
and away from standard
you know,
pubs.
Yeah, rather than, like I said, my father-in-law used to have a regular, you know, he was a bar on the road there. He used to have his mates in there. He's going there regularly, you know, three, four times a week, just pop in, pick up a pint here there. He doesn't do that anymore. It's just too expensive.
It was a social hub.
And the thing is, I mean, a lot of people will still do event-driven things with lots of friends, like, say, escape rooms. If your pint has gone up by a lot of money, it's cost you a lot of money, you're not going to do it four or five times a week. You can do it maybe once, you know, maybe twice. So, it's expensive pints these days. there's a lot of money in there. When you think of it, they're 99.9% water. It's like, £6 a pint or something. It's nuts, isn't it, really? But
there's a lot of energy that goes into making a pint.
Yeah, that's the trouble.
And a lot of, whether that's in actually the brewing process or the distribution process.
So the wages and the license and the fees, all that stuff is on top of that, isn't it?
We live up the road from a brewery called Adnams, and they've been struggling to make money for a while. Over the years, they've closed a lot of pubs.
House prices have gone down the fourth month in a row. It says gradual drop. Worst places are southern England and Wales. The average house price now has gone down from 293,000 last August to 285,000 now. So again, we are in this area. Markets are ahead of the economy. And we're getting those bad news coming out now. Market knows about this. The market knows.
That's true. But then if you look at, LSL today.
Yeah.
The market's been caught off guard there. We should have known that the weak state of the housing market would have an impact on trading at companies like LSL. So I'm not always convinced that the economic bad news that exists in the world has been priced in by the market. Individual equity level, like LSL.
But when you're looking to invest in companies, you've got to look, though, first and foremost, is this in an area that's in a very, the sector is very weak, it's likely to downgrade. That's why it's a stock market, it's a market of stocks. When you look at the stocks, if there's been lack of growth around, find stocks with growth that is almost impervious to what's going on. There are certain areas you can pick, and that's why it's a stock picker's market at the moment. I think you've got to find those areas, like you say. We made last week. Sometimes we don't make the connection between the macro and our individual investment. Sometimes we sort of think, hang on, will that affect my stocks? So that has to be done all the time, doesn't it?
There's Paul Hill put it up on our Slack channel today. Something he posted on LinkedIn over the weekend, which was about the hit rate on stock picking, which is below 50% where was that? I mean, this is globally. So the winners outweigh the losers, and I've seen a study. It's a guy called Henrik Bessenbinder. Did some analysis over the years. Some years ago of where returns come from. And, over the long term, the returns on equities come from a very, very small handful of successful shares. Mm. So it is quite interesting, how all this stuff works. And it's not necessarily because companies do badly, but it's because they disappear quickly sometimes because they're bought or whatever it might be, often because they're bought. I think the average lifespan of a company, listed company, is something like seven years. Yeah. Which is insane. Right. There you go.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll just leave you with this chart here. Yeah. Cheers,
chart.
Everyone.
What chart we got there?
Maybe not. Do your research. Better. Thank you very much. And we'll speak tomorrow.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.